to rid themselves of the threat of a monarchist revival, seen as part of the white effort, to rid themselves of the symbolic center of the potential white movement, in July of 1918, the Bolsheviks executed the former Tsar, his wife, his children, even their personal servants who were with them in exile in a town, Yekaterinburg, in the Ural Mountains. This was a brutal event. It took place in the middle of the night in a basement, and afterwards their bodies were effectively hidden. There's great debate about whether Moscow made this decision and ordered it, or whether this was the initiative of local radicals in Yekaterinburg. Nonetheless, it rid the government, it rid the Red Movement of this threatening central symbol and perhaps leader of the white opposition. But this, the execution of the Romanovs, was just the beginning. Various other members of the royal family were taken out and shot. Indeed, toward the end of 1918, the Cheka launched a nationwide, what was called Red Terror, against all opponents of the regime. Suspected white collaborators, sympathizers, were arrested, usually with the help of the Cheka, and shot, and in general, all members of elite classes were declared to be suspect. In fact, according to official Soviet figures, from 1918 to 1920, in the years of the Civil War, 13,000 people were executed by the Cheka, almost all without trial. Most historians believe the numbers were higher. Some argue they probably were 10 times as high as that 13,000 given by the official government. Thousands were also put in prison. Many were sent to the new prison camp system that was beginning to emerge. And brutality in many ways was part of the style of the time. Torture was not unknown when enemies were captured. And some of this torture was, in fact, brutally symbolic, one might say. As, for example, as stories often were told, when soldiers in the Red Army captured white officers, they would nail their epaulets to their shoulders. Brutality was part of the style of order and suppression and victory. Of course, it's worth saying that this ruthlessness could have easily worked against the communists, but fortunately for them, the whites were scarcely less ruthless. They also requisitioned grain by force, though people who have studied it find out they were less effective at doing it. They were less efficient, less systematic. They also, the whites also used terror, and they also used torture against people they found might sympathize with the red side. And indeed, there were reports as well of white atrocities equivalent to the red atrocities. Rape was often apparently used by the white army, and even occasionally the crucifixion of suspected communists in public squares. And all of this brings me to the most important point, to what perhaps is the most decisive difference between the Reds and the Whites. Though note, this is a scholar's interpretation. Ultimately, and it has been argued this most often, the communists won, not only because they were the most organized and disciplined and had the center and could be most brutal, but because they had ultimately more natural support among the majority of the population, most importantly among the peasants, who were, after all, the rank and file of both armies, the Reds and the Whites, mostly draftees. Partly, of course, the Bolsheviks simply did, in terms of getting this popular support, a better job at getting their message across as to what Bolshevik power represented. They had, of course, many years of experience in spreading their message with newspapers and leaflets and word of mouth. They were good agitators, and they began to use new means, motion pictures, very simple and dramatic posters to convey the meaning of their cause. In fact, they had a whole branch of government devoted to convincing the people that their cause was the most just cause. It was called the Department of Agitation and Propaganda. But obviously more important than the medium of Bolshevik propaganda and agitation was their message. On every occasion, the communists repeated the same simple arguments, verbally, visually, and indeed in policies such as their land reform policies. They kept saying it again and again, a white victory would mean nothing but the return of the capitalists and the landowners, supported, they like to say, by international capital who cared only about extracting more money from Russia and nothing about Russia or Russians. In other words, the old oppressions of the past would return.